Но сейчас, помимо этого, он еще является главным редактором журнала «Документы», следующий, который пройдет в 2007 году. И вот в этой роли, наверное, он сегодня выступает как представитель кураторской команды «Документы». Вот.
Спасибо.
Thank you, Sasha. Thank you for inviting me again to Moscow, and thank you, Victor, for your really kind of broad panorama that brought up a lot of things one could immediately try to link with. I mean, starting from the four points, actually, that you sketched out in as new paradigms of an educational, so to say, system, or as the new kind of linking points whereon these new institutional frameworks would have to be built. You mentioned biopolitics or biodidactics, which seems to be a very, very difficult term for me, as it is linked to some kind of an essentialism, which is always culturalized and can't be set in, I think, in that kind of pure scientific way that it is sometimes brought up. But that would maybe be a detour. And there was another term that I found out, or that I tried to get from your points. It was techniques of the self. Shaping singularities, which is an issue really that, for instance, the avant-garde from the 50s on tried to develop, and there was a philosophical discussion about that that came alongside that kind of development, not to mention one of the most maybe important positions in that discussion that has been the late Michel Foucault, who was currently thinking about that kind of possibilities of shaping oneself, performing an artistic singularity within the frameworks of a late modern society, and how that would conflict with the system and strata of that society. And there was a third quest, the quest for interdisciplinarity, which is highly needed, but if you look into the university systems, is closing away very much. I mean, everybody of you is aware of the pragmatics of university systems. There is a real quest for disciplinarity. I mean, all the rating systems that are crucial at the moment to get a professorship at all, even in social sciences and humanities, are very much linked to disciplinarity. So to get that kind of teaching ability in one of the old structures, in one of the old buildings, the so-called university that engages or allows you actually to link to educational subjects in a broader sense is very much centered around disciplinarity. So another really big issue to discuss about. And there was a third thing which was about the figure, a fourth thing which was about the figure of the teacher itself. And they're sketching out these two kind of the pragmatic teacher that teaches skills and the charismatic teacher that teaches something like an idea of a possible knowledge, as you did it, Victor, is problematic for me as well. And then just trying to make the shift away from this both of these persons who still are, so to say, persons that are living within the academy and saying that what we need, following, so to say, in a way, the relational aesthetics of Bourdieu, is something like a dialogical person, like a multi-personality that can cope with both is an interesting aspect, but hard to get. So I think there is a lot of subjects that we could discuss after this talk of yours, Victor, and I really would go into these issues when you're back again on the table here. But let me maybe start up with the fourth, the charismatic teacher. I recently had a talk with a quite famous female art historian from Russia, and she was complaining that Monastirsky is now marketed. She said, well, maybe it would have been better if we would have let him alone and stayed that enigma that he was, because somehow the market is up to destroy the enigma even of Russian conceptualism. And I found this a very deep perception, so to say, because of it has a lot to do with the circumstances of production that Russian conceptualism has been in at the point when it was actually acting in the late 70s, early 80s, and this transformation of the reception that comes via other forces, which Ernst Bloch usually said, are the forces that simplify and put everything down to the same, to an idea of sameness, namely the market. What I find interesting is that I would not have heard this, for instance, about one of the American conceptualists, out of, say, the high conceptualist group of Kossuth or of Escher or of others out of that period. There would never have been that kind of notion, like the enigma of these persons would be destroyed via the market. And I was thinking, why is that so? Maybe because of, Victor has been touching that subject, that conceptual tendencies in former Eastern Europe or under the structuralist, the high structuralist system of socialist governance had to escape into a much into another positioning, another self-positioning, which is, was closing away, hiding away into some privacy, acting out that kind of public within a private realm, and therefore being much more ontological and metaphysical in their practices. So maybe that is slightly the beginning of an explanation for this. But I'm not here to just try to answer some questions that came up with Victor's talk, but I'm sure you may be interested in that what we are doing in Documenta to cope all these things that Sasha, you mentioned that are really complicated at the moment. And I've heard that yesterday, the day before yesterday, you had two famous Americans lecturing here in Moscow, namely Susan Buchmann-Morse and Frederick Jameson, and maybe that what they said is quite a good starting point for a linkage to the Documenta project, because of this is dealing a lot with some of the assumptions that came out of that kind of epistema. Jameson, for instance, who was currently who was ongoing actually questioning the status of the current in his three famous books, actually. Now is in his last years came up with a theory of multiple modernities, which I find highly interesting because of he himself, after the after his critique of postmodernism, is going back backwards a step towards a possible universalism and how that could be constructed or negotiated beyond the kind of universalism that comes usually with the notion of modernity, which is a highly shattered notion. And Susan Buchmann-Morse was, as I have heard, talking about the implosion of the image via the proliferation of the image, so to say, and was giving a talk that put that alongside the setup of power structures, which I, which is partly a question that we are in at Documenta as well. What I heard in your in your introduction, Sasha, was some deep notions that come with the notion of modernity, namely identity, which is a pure notion of a modernist Western discourse in a deep sense, and a concept that is highly, so to say, geographically and historically framed, but still is one of the most interesting principles that is structuring, let's say, the discourses and the dispositives of the current. Then there is another thing that you said, we are claiming a new universal approach for towards knowledge, and I'm asking myself why and how that might be. And then you have been mentioning that what we need is something like new institutionalizations, flexible, self-sufficient, and dealing with the local. So when we got this strange fetish into hands, a cold documenta, which is still something like different from most of the 50, 80 biennials that are currently building up that multifocal art world, we thought about how to deal with such problems within that kind of curatorial work that we would have to do. Problems of inclusion, exclusion, problems of multifocality, problems of making a statement, in making like a curatorial statement in that kind of multifocal environment. And it was much more than a technique or a methodology that we have been looking for, and how to bring that under kind of a methodological approach, and not so much, so to say, just dealing with some with major curatorial ideas. And the project that we developed, that I developed for that, had a lot to do with the history of this institution. I mean, as I'm talking at an art fair in Europe, it might not be necessary to talk about what documenta is, which, for instance, in when I'm talking in Africa, when I'm talking in Southeast Asia, is necessary. So this is the first consumption we had to see, that this, so to say, formatting, very much formatting, as exhibition that for some moments or in some phases really marked paradigm shifts in the art world, is something that is localized, so to say. Then we had to think about the transformation of this exhibition itself. In the beginning, it was an exhibition that fought, so to say, for the universalist, modernist approach of a post-war kind of modernity that had a lot to do with the developments of the 30s and then the catastrophes, the humanitarian catastrophes of the Second World War, and the new kind of approach to cope with that within a new ontology of the image that we call usually modernism, so to say. And this was maybe even the last point when my documenta started in the late 50s, where that kind of modernism was universal. Late 50s, early 60s, where it existed as well in the Western world, as well as in the Eastern, as in the Eastern Hemisphere, and in the colonial, post-colonial nations of the so-called, then so-called Third World. That notion of modernity, modernism, was to be on display with the first documentaries. That was the first kind of world exhibition of modernist art. And that changed dramatically during the five years tournament of the exhibitions. In 1972, there was another kind of paradigmatic change with the Harald Seemann exhibition, Harald Seemann Documenta 6, which nowadays in the canonical histories of documenta, or even of, so to say, modern art, as they are presented in some canonical books, this marks the entrance of anti-art and of conceptual and experimental tendencies into the high canons. If you look back to that exhibition, what it really was, it was a very, very market-going exhibition that coped a lot of the new realist painting and so on and so on. And the conceptual part was very small in it. So this was the maybe the documenta where the market for the last time wanted to have the power, so to say, of presenting itself within that kind of paradigmatic exhibition, and lost because of from that moment on, the exhibition stood for something that is beyond the market and is somehow shifted away from the market. This is something different from other biennials. Documenta has a status even in the Western hemispheres that is not really standing for developments of the art market, but much more for developments of episteme. And when he actually said for the first time together, we said, yeah, it would be ridiculous, or it would be a bit strangely renitent not to take this history into account. That had two major steps with Documenta 10 and 11. Documenta 10, when Katrin Tawid, who was then actually hired because of everybody thought she would take the count for a post-colonial multifocality seriously, and she would present, so to say, the art of the other, of other regions, because she used to work a lot with other regions, did not fulfill that kind of expectations, but reconsidered, so to say, the political and epistemical capacities, the discursive capacities of Western art. So what she displayed was very much an alternative history of experimental and conceptual tendencies and of discursivity. So we saw that as a starting point for our project too. And the second thing was then Ogui Nwesso's document 11, where he, in contrary to Katrin Tawid, took that kind of quest, so to say, to be multifocal, to shift the perspective away from a West-Western or a West-Eastern discourse that was on display as well, and culturalized Documenta in a certain sense, as he opened it not just for artistic practices, but he opened it to that kind of postmodern, post-colonial cultural realm and cultural discussions. The art that was displayed within that was very much market going and was very, was so to say, almost identifiable to certain institutional sets or gallery sets, but that was not the quest of this documentary. The quest was much more to show that kind of culturalist perspective and to shift away from the exhibition with this idea of having platforms and starting the document in Vienna, then moving to Delhi, then moving to Lagos, then moving to Saint Tome, and then back to Kassel. So to take that tournament of decentralizing a former centralized exhibition. So this was the situation that we found. We found ourselves amidst a strange set up of current art world, so to say. On the one hand, there is the market. It's very strong at the moment, and it's getting strong beyond that usual system that established the market horse of the 80s, where you had mainly two centers, New York and Cologne, that made that kind of horse of an international art market in the 80s. But now you're really having a multi-centered kind of market environment. So you're having a strong market in India, for instance. You're having a very, very strong market with collectors in South America. Having that's for instance the reason why Art Basel went to Miami, because of the all the South American and the Florida Hispano collectors are going to invest at home, so to say. Then there is a very strong market developing in Southeast Asia that even creates its own institutions, private institutions, sets up something like a simulation of an old institutional art system in the private art museums of Korea and Japan and so on and so on, which is mirroring somehow the old system but totally driven by a private economy. That is the one part. Then on the second part, then there is a second kind of system developing, which Documenta somehow is much more related to. That's the biennial system. I mean, everybody is aware of that, the figure of the curator, a very recent figure, so to say, in the circuit of modern art. It's not much older than 25 years, and it developed very strongly in the 90s, the figure of the curator, and the marketing concurrency of European and Asian cities very much developed that display of having biennials and market identity constructions via modern or market city constructions via modern arts. And this system of the curator and this need of the cities found itself very well in kind of that biennial thing. And, but the interesting thing about the biennials is that you have some old institutions, a few of them, and a lot of new institutions, so to say. And some of the new institutions are in the peripheries, and in a strange move, the periphery, the peripheric institutions at the beginning tried to mirror the internationalism of the, so to say, central biennials. But the dialectic is that the central biennials suddenly feel obliged to take the call for more local and locality actually seriously, and so you're getting a much more multicultural environment in the so-called central biennials that are very much shifting away from the state representational system to a much more upward curated system. And there is a then there is a third a system that has nothing to do with both, so to say, which is a system of local links, local kind of small developments, mid-sized developments that try to cope with the not always transparent brutality of the power relations of the locals. And there are a lot of the debates about new institutionalizations that we are having are coming out from that system, which is a system of neighborhoods that is in a way translocal because of it is built up of networks, but it is always localized in one or two small institutions or in publishing initiatives and so on and so on. So these three, these are the main three very, very roughly and woodcut drawn here on the table systems that we found ourselves amid. And the idea was how to make a step that makes this obvious coping with the kind of multifocal environments not transparent but manageable in a methodological way. And it was partly the second and the third system we thought about, so to say. I myself come from, my background is a magazine maker, as Victor. So we made a magazine in Vienna that always tried to be a bit counter-canonical and to deal with local histories in a sense that it would, that they would not have been just identifiable as mainstream of minorities discourse that is very international in the art world. So I learned a lot in that academy, and the idea was why not using these production entities of knowledge to get deeper knowledge about certain situations around the world. And so we set up this Documenta Publications project, which is a very, very complicated project and a project that tries to take the call for locality and multivocality seriously without giving up that kind of contradictory move to try to be contextual something and on the other way bringing it into a comparative system, which is always very complicated because of contextualization sometimes really tends to essentialize things and make them really something just specific. People who are deep in context and are using the contextual method sometimes stuck, so to say, in that kind of power systems of the local and in describing it. So there was a need to take both turns, a comparative and a contextualizing turn, so to say. And we organized it as the follows. Actually, setting up this exhibition, there have been a lot of talks with people and there's been already a practice in the curatorial. And there have been some main topics we wanted to deal with in sketching out fields of references where one could, place artworks into a field of relations without making them just an illustration of a theme. And this is four main questions we formulated. The first question has a lot to do with that what Victor just said, and it's a question about modernity. It is sketched as, is modernity our antiquity? In a similar, very similar sense to that what antiquity was for the bourgeois ages and for the modern universalism in terms of points of development from concepts like individuality, from concepts like an institutionalized system of governance, and so on and so on and so on. So this is the first question, and this is a question that touches a lot a post-colonial situation, so to say. And the second question is a question about that what Victor maybe thought about as being the biodynamics or bioethics of the thing. It is a question really about this strange figure of life. So you could say the fact that it is about the notion of life as such, which is a very culturalized notion as well, and not just a notion that you can easily cope with the idea of bioeducation. And so we asked ourselves a question that recently was phrased by a very famous Italian philosopher, but comes from a German background, so to say, firstly phrased by the philosopher Walter Benjamin, and it is the question, what is bare life? What is this figure of life? In the Benjamin Agamben sense, this is very much going with a modernist kind of notion of society. The bare life people are the ones that are out, so to say, that are not governed, that are not even possible to serve in an army for something like an identity, that are, so to say, what Sigmund Bauman recently called the debris of societies, the rubble of societies that is swept across the oceans, maybe sometimes captured in ships, sometimes captured in camps. That was the notion of this bare life that Agamben brought up, but we wanted to pose it even wider into concepts of what is this notion of life culturally in diverse situations. And the third actually really was education. You may not be aware that Kassel is the hometown of the Brothers Grimm, and so to say a big space of German enlightenment and of that idea of having something like a nation that is a cultural nation, which is very much an idea of German romanticism that proliferated into the world. So this notion of education in the formulation of the Brothers Grimm had always that kind of double meaning in it, as it follows the German word Bildung, which means somebody has the word image in it, and is active and passive, meaning formatting something, like structuring something like an institution that will serve for education, but on the other hand, being active in self-formating. And Bildung, which means both formatting and being formatted. So that was the notion that we set the question and a bit rephrased an old Lenin quote a lot, what to do now, because of his thought this is a problem of local institutions. So there was something like an extra to that education seemed thinking about the necessity of diverse local entities and local institutionalization processes, new institutionalization processes that could serve that. Coincidentally, Manifesto had a quite similar, but if you think about it, a different idea about thinking about artistic education, which is a very precise and very interesting field because of a lot of laboratoria of that more general, so to say, picture of education have been developed within the art school. So the idea is that we would ask this, as I said, knowledge production small groups that are grouped around editorials of magazines, journals, sometimes radio stations, sometimes online platforms, to ask them what their response to these questions would be. So, what we did, we invited on a regional basis groups of editors of magazines that share one perspective, namely that they are not just representative glossy market magazines, but try to engage either in producing a discursive space or in displaying a local discourse or translating a local discourse into, let's say, a media and make it translatable. So we asked these local groups of editors to discuss possible links in small seminaries, to discuss possible links to that project. In the second phase, we asked them, this did not happen in Europe because of all of us have been traveling a lot and we know, so to say, the European people, but that happened in other environments where we had to get to know deeper knowledge about these publication landscapes. So the second phase is that we said to them, well, we invite you to think with us about these subjects. So we gave, so to say, these three, four questions totally autonomously into the hand of these people. And they are currently, this is a process that is now going to the first phase to the end, are activating that within their editorial practices. There was just one precondition, that they would have to print, respectively publish, this to their audiences. So that this was not an extra for Documenta, but really something that was organically within their publishing initiatives and served, so to say, their authors, or their knowledge of authors and authorship, their artistic or intellectual circumstances, and it is not, as it is not just arts magazine, but intellectual magazines as well, political magazines, some magazines that you would call critical magazines, even, but very rarely, some university journals. We did not take a lot of university, for the reasons of disciplinarity that I sketched out at the very beginning. This is this was really a decision not to use too many university journals, but just university journals that stand for something like a counterdisciplinary important initiative. So we asked these people, what would your answer be with your kind of epistema within your artistic fields and practices, as we ask them not just for new texts that are referential texts in terms of theory or essayism, but for artistic contribution as well, and for historic material. So to say, to display historic material out of their context, out of their localities, that for them seem to be important for a wider perspective, for an international discourse at the moment, and have not been available so far in translations. This is currently going on. So we are seeing in something like 80 of these editorial groups around the world popping up contributions to Documenta 12 already. We invited, for instance, Victor to be one of these, but there are other Russian initiatives as well. And you will see popping up like these responses to the Documenta questions in these magazines, totally independently, and we even have a very vague idea what it is about. So it's really a very intense moment at the moment because of the contributions are coming in and we are seeing how it fills up. We have an idea because of we talk to the people a lot, but the entire contributions are commissioned by the partners. And in the second phase, we are going from June on, end of June on. This is all of this is put into a virtual editorial office that we are building currently in the internet. It is a newsroom
and an internet just open to these magazines that uses as a display. So where to say the contributions from Argentina and the contributions from South Korea and the contributions from Austria and the contributions from Moscow are put on display in their own original language and in a translation into one of the colonial languages that we take care of in terms of copy editing. This internal office just open to the magazines is, so to say, like a meeting place of correspondents that correspond around one of the themes. And all the material that is produced locally is going into there, and it is a virtually copy-free environment, so that if a magazine or an editorial in Russia is interested in a contribution by an author from Argentina, it can translate it down and publish it in his magazine or her magazine. And the same is true for others. So this is creating something like a knowledge base of authorship and an image base of different artistic practices and of a mode of historical comparison. But we are bringing people not just together in that virtual environment, but we are bringing them together physically during the next three quarters of the year. We are having 7 transcontinental meetings where we invite editors and authors that share a certain interest. I mean, you already see some spheres of interest developed transcontinentally or contextually, and we invite these people to seminaries to deepen that kind of perspective. And these new contributions that come out of that comparison of local contexts so to say, the second phase of that editorial process. All this, then in the end, is the material for the publications of Documenta. So the texts and the imagery that are in the publications of Documenta will be created via that process, which is a very taking process because of, as you imagine, the system is pretty naive as it tries to cope with a new universalism, at least as it tries to test out if there are possible comparisons. I mean, so to say, globalization helps a lot, and the internalization of formats of media helps a lot. There's a lot of links that are really common in a postmodern world. But there is a lot of specificity and a lot of differences as well, and cultural singularities. For instance, we are seeing already side effects of the process going on in the Arab world. At the meeting with the editors, it turned out that it is very hard to translate some of the terminology that we are using, or that even, so to say, the international artist community is using into Arabic, because of the High Arabic is a very shielded and governed language that doesn't have the structure to cope with a lot of the terms. So we are seeing a subgroup of editors developing and writing a glossary on certain terms of contemporary art and contemporary thought for the Arab, for the High Arab. Terms like subjectification, terms like installation, terms like activist practices have to be translated into proper Arab, and there is a subgroup working on that, for instance. In other regions, it's much more that these small and mid-scale media are not organized. So for it was, for instance, in Southeast Asia, in the more centrally and authoritarian governed countries, it was the first meeting of these editors at all that took place that we organized in Singapore. And there we are seeing a structure developing that already created a funding where they themselves say this is a reliable thing to talk about. Transporter-wise about some subjects, but it's not necessarily the Documenta subjects that are of interest here. Here it's totally different subjects that we share. So this network that is created via the Documenta initiative is functioning, but for other subjects, because of, as you can imagine, and you have heard, these three thematic fields are very center tower, the modernist, postmodernist, postcolonial paradigm, and are not easily to fill up in certain contexts. And so we are, what we are seeing is a lot of talk back as well at the moment. So from winter 2006 on already, we are going to publish a row of three books, booklets, magazines that have been created out of this discursive process, and we have the publication in the around 80 magazines around the world. And for at the opening of the documentary, we even are putting on the. But this is a closure again. So as the project started with a closure, namely that we included some magazines, some journals, some editorials to make something like a curatorial position readable. We will do that in the end out of the material. So we again will select what serves as of interest for documenta, which is something totally different from that what might serve of interest for the local communities. But it's an interesting kind of discourse that is going on. But the other material will not be lost. But at the opening of documenta, we are opening a web journal where all the contributions in all the languages that they are available will be readable for the readers. So it's not just that ones that we selected, but one can see what the other discourse, so to say, around this subject was in the 80 journals. And during documenta, we are inviting the journals to do something like a silent academy and presentations in a permanent way. It is a bit following that kind of 100 guests, 100 days, but trying to decentralize that as well, and not to make this mythological the main 100 important intellectuals, but really creating a discursive space and having small-scale discussions and presentations that the general public can enter, but that do not just serve for the general public, but serve back, so to say, for the knowledge producers as well. So that is the plan, so to say. It's quite... It's quite taking. It is full of contradictions, and it, as I can imagine, raises a lot of questions, not just about real, like let's say, verbal translation, but about translatability and a system of, let's say, horizontal collaboration via one of the major hegemonical biennials in the world, and I'm open to answer these questions as soon as they pop up. Thank you for your patience at this technical description.
Ну вот в этом случае есть возможность задать вопросы какие-то, если вы появились. Вот, пожалуйста, Кэти. А может быть, ты подойдешь тогда, чтобы здесь был? А вот там есть.
Yesterday I've been present when Susan Buck-Morse was reading the report, but at the same time there were other reports read by a number of Russian intellectuals, and we really discussed this gap between icon representing power and representing some kind of unity of the ideology and the material world, which cannot be visualized and represented. And, a group of intellectuals, they were discussing the situation when art has exhausted its universal project, and therefore, to touch the realm of bare life, art is not necessary anymore. So, all kinds of network interaction and interactions and media interactions, which have already been present, they already accomplished this function. Well, I think this thought absolutely reactionary, and I don't agree with it. But what is your idea about the potence of art in filling this gap?
You said the idea of networking is reactionary, and you don't agree.
I didn't say network is reactionary. I said that network is considered to be the realm of amateur art, which doesn't need any competence anymore to be intensive and to touch the material life, to be this very bare life. So what is the role of competence and the institute of competence in new situation when art has to fill this gap towards multitudes and multivocality?
First, to the point that you made about the material world, actually. There is a very nice small quote by Hannah Arendt, where she's saying one of the things that took her almost the most strange in all this value production of the capitalist system is that it is about a set of objects that are the objects that are the objects, so to say, of desire that are away after 5 years. So you don't see them. So it is like the material world, in a way, that what we see as a production is very, very much short-term symbolizing. You know what I mean? It's shifting away. It's again shifting away. And there is a second quote. I brought it always together with a Mark Wigley quote. When Mark Wigley said, "Well, isn't it strange that in the photographs of houses of the 30s, in the universalist like international style houses of Corbusier, the only things that seem a bit outdated is the cars that stand in front of them." So maybe this is something like an image answer to what you said about the status of an episteme like modernity and about, let's say, the materiality of a capitalist system. So I think there is still a dialectic that's worthwhile thinking about. Second, I totally disagree. Seeing the struggles for possible secular lives, in parts of the world that art is no longer a means of production of that kind of possible secularity. I don't see that so. If you're going to, as far as Thailand already, there is, with artistic practices, a lot of, so to say, practices that are counter-hegemonical and, critical and educating people in a sense that is enlightened are coming within the arts field. And so was that, for instance, in my perspective, in the 90s and till the turn of the millennium in a lot of European and Western environments as well. It is just that at the moment we're having in the Western world, and here it starts again, a very strong market with, a lot of taking attendance and thinking that this is the only art world. And maybe this production of the symbolic is not so much of value in that sense of creating a multitude that you have in mind. But I always see when I travel that there is, in the formation of that kind of multitude you're having in mind, you're having a Negri Virno multitude conception in mind, I think, that the agents of the symbolic are very much coming out of artistic contexts and not so much out of, let's say, political activist context. Political activists sometimes are deeply stuck into their own ideologema, you know, and it is hard to create that kind of multitude because there is a lot of orthodoxy in the activists' episteme, and it is not an art. Sometimes it really has the capacity to override that kind of academisms. And aesthetic discourses seem to be of value still. Let me try to find an example from my trips. Maybe a good example at the moment would be Argentina. Argentina, where you had that kind of 2000s decline, kind of this, you had the military government. There's a lot of people disappearing, and the void, the something of being not visible is deeply written into this national kind of symbolics. The invisible, making something visible. So in 2000, when there was this turn, the World Bank, so to say, corrupted the whole economy, these two movements came together, let's say, an anti-globalist and a deeply nationalist quarrel for visibility of something, and that was coped by a group of activist artists very well, that then in the second half of, in the first years of this millennium, made their international careers. The Kirchner government actually took advantage of that kind of power in restructuring Argentina against, so to say, the World Bank paradigm, but suddenly developed its own memory policies, and there is a very interesting debate about a rather rhetoric, realistic monument that they want to build up in a park in Buenos Aires to in honor of the missing persons out of the regime. So there is suddenly a conflict in between this realism that the Kirchner government has and, so to say, the activists' position, and a third thing, namely the history of Buenos Aires as being one of the main places where cultures have been translated in a symbolic way from the 40s on. I mean, Duchamp used to be, the first Duchamp translation used to be in Argentina. A lot of psychoanalysis has been translated via Buenos Aires. So you're having a lot of different representational systems. Being in favor just of one would mean to not cope with the complexity of this local situation. What is happening with both the Kirchner realism and the activist kind of multitude idea of creating the symbolic via these notions of symbolic action in demonstrations and so on, are suppressing the other, namely the artistic, old artistic form discourse that is was very important for Argentina. So the conceptual and post-conceptual tendencies of the 60s, 70s that are still of a high value in the environments that are getting privatized. So I don't think that these capacities of art to speak and to argue in that symbolic realm for one or the other position is something we can miss. Is not necessarily any longer of no value because of other networks create their kind of sameness elsewhere. It is much more about contradiction in that way than it would be about sameness. What I dislike about most of the networks of multitude is that they're just creating sameness and not aware of dissonances within them.
Thank you.